You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Tom Moulton's coming up on Jump in Tucson in about an hour. Remember, on Saturday morning up at the Gaslight Music Hall, we're going to be doing, me and Austin from Goldwater Institute are going to be doing the, we're going to go over, there are 13 ballot propositions on your ballot in November. So we're going to go over all 13 and explain them to you Saturday up at the Gaslight Music Hall up in Oral Valley. So let Anna know you're coming at info@northwestrepublicans.com. She's got about 80, 90 people coming so far, and it should be a heck of a hootenanny. So again, info@northwestrepublicans.com. We are continuing on with our Hall of Achievement interviews. Love doing this. I just found out again about a half hour ago that we've been doing these for 10 years and the interviews for 10 years, which is so awesome. And always love helping out and being part of this. And so we have our Hall of Fame inductees. They decided to go together. I guess you guys like each other. We have Mitch Sigsworth. Good morning, sir.
Yes,
how are you
good
doing?
Good morning, Chris.
Great, and we have Daryl Durham. How are you guys?
Good morning, Chris. Doing fine.
How do you guys feel? We'll start off with Mitch, that you're now a Hall of Fame inductee. How does that feel?
I'll find out tonight. But it's funny because I just got back from a trip from England, and that's where I'm originally from. I was telling my family about this event, and they said, "Oh, wow, so do you get your picture in a hole somewhere in a museum?" And yeah, I think so. I think that's what it is. But it sounds fantastic, and it's obviously it's an honor, and I'm very humbled by it. But I guess I'm an old guy. That's probably why I'm getting it, really.
Who's your football club?
Football club, Liverpool, number 2 in the league right now. Yeah,
my wife is a massive Liverpool fan.
Oh, good.
So, I'm. You don't want to know who I support. They might be a little bit to the a large club, just to the.
Oh, they're not starting off very well.
That was some game, but I don't. We can do soccer. Maybe we'll come back and do soccer one day. Daryl Durham, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How about you? How do you feel about being a Hall of Fame inductee?
Well, when they first told me that I was being inducted into the Hall of Achievement, I thought I should ask for a recount. It didn't seem possible. It's an honor, you know, surrounded by the people who are already in there and the people down the road will be there. It is a real honor.
So, Daryl, what was your duties in your career?
Newspaper. I mean, I started newspapers when I was 19.
Which newspaper was that?
Kansas City Star.
Okay.
Great newspaper. I was lucky. I got in the newspaper business at just about the peak, the real, in my mind, the real golden age.
Which was? What year?
Do you really want to know?
That's life, baby.
1968, man.
Pull the Band-Aid off.
It was, when I got there, that newspaper was phasing out the last of its old linotype machines. Yeah. There was like 2 left. They did classified ads or something, and it changed quickly after that and never stopped changing for the next many, many, many years.
So what duties did you have at the Kansas City Star?
I started out as a copy boy in the advertising department, had copy boys. I was a great copy boy. That's the best. That was the last job I knew how to do.
Love it. Why do you consider that the peak? I think I have my thoughts. Why do you consider that the peak of the newspaper business?
They had more people on the street, more people in the building, more proofreaders, more advertising salespeople. It was a great, I mean, financially, it was a great time, so you could do that. But there was also this cockiness. I mean, I hate to say arrogance, but there was that kind of swagger in the newspaper business. They were the big dogs. They tackled the big stories because they knew nobody else could do it.
Right.
And for better or worse, that sort of permeated the building. In my case, in Kansas City, what made it even nicer was the building I was in was an old building, built in 1914. Hemingway had worked there when he was a kid.
Look and I at kept that. Thinking, he was also a copy boy.
He That's walked good. These stairs. No, he was a Cub reporter.
Oh, wow.
At 17 or something. So anyway, there was a history there. It was. I loved the place. I loved the business. Fell in love with it after that and couldn't get out of it.
I like the swagger discussion. I like the idea because it's about content. right? Eventually, it's about engaging content, right?
Yeah.
And you would think that also investigative reporting.
Yeah.
Right? And so Woodward and Bernstein was kind of that national kind of peak of that, right?
Yeah, that newspaper won Pulitzer for investigative reporting, among other things. So it was just, it was a good time. Not that the other newspapers weren't also great. I'm lucky to work for three, but that was where I got started. And I, as I say, I fell in love with it. It's like a...
I think it was also the peak of them being that fourth estate of, you know, kind of holding power accountable.
As I said, it was, they covered stories that, that the other media just simply couldn't. I mean, just too many people. They had guys go overseas for European tours and investigated the Hyatt collapse and all that kind of stuff as a unit that was, that kind of makes you, fills you with some sense of we're the big dog.
Mitch, what was your first gig in the advertising world?
Radio.
Okay.
Yeah, 1990. I worked in Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and it was a classic rock station.
Yes.
Yeah. WLAV.
Oh.
And loved it. And I don't know if you were in radio back then, but that was kind of when the consolidation started and radio changed forever. Basically.
So you were a DJ at?
No. Gosh. They actually.
I mean, I got an English guy.
Yeah,
for God's
but you
sakes.
Know what? They at first they thought they had a gem that I could voice over, you know, a lot of the commercials with my incredible, beautiful English accent. But unfortunately, when it's recorded, or even maybe if anyone's listening out there, it's pretty monotone. And so I was only used once.
Oh no!
But I was good at sales, so that's what they did. You know, it stuck me in the sales team and. That's how I got started.
How old were you when you were doing sales? Started sales?
29.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Prior to that, I was teaching, and then obviously I came to the States for college.
Were you initially good at sales, or was it rough and you learned good things and as you moved through?
I think I knew I had a knack for, you know, I loved the whole process of the sales cycle. And so I think there was some natural ability there. So, you know, but it's been 35 years now. So
what separates a good sales account executive from a not so good? What's the one or two things that makes the difference?
I would say positivity. You've got to be persuasive. And I would say, not take things too personally.
Well, that's true. That's way true, right? Because as you like say, you have so many no's till you get to a yes kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let those no's crush your spirit, as we say.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, Matt, let's go to break. We're going to do another segment with these two gentlemen. We're hanging out with Mitch Sigsworth and Daryl Durham, and we're doing the Hall of Achievements. These guys are the two Hall of Fame inductees that are going to go in tonight at Hacienda del Sol, 5:30. Dave said there should be some tickets at the door. Today's bump battle is Elton John versus Billy Joel. We're doing two guys that can sing and play a piano, as they say, and they toured together about 15, 20 years ago. You're on Wake Up Tucson. All right, 8:20 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 of the Voice, local news and talk. We're having fun with our Hall of Achievement AdFed Awards. 10th year that we have done these interviews, and I love doing them. And we have Mitch Sigsworth here, and we have Daryl Durham, and they are the two Hall of Fame inductees, as we like to say. So, Daryl, we were talking a little bit off air about as you came to Tucson. When did you come to Tucson?
20 years ago.
20 years ago. What was your position at the paper 20 years ago?
I think strategic marketing manager or something like that in the marketing department. Marketing was my career for quite a few years before that.
Were you actually strategic?
Tried to be.
Yeah.
as much as the industry would let you be at the time, you know?
So it's a weird time, right? Right? The last 20 years of the newspaper world.
It is.
So explain trying to do that job in a landscape that was changing so fast.
Well, the biggest change was that you had to begin to incorporate digital in everything that you did, whether you were talking about subscriptions or advertising or even community sponsorships. Digital had to play a role in it. So you had to learn that business as best you could and be able to put a reason behind both. You had to be able to say to people, you really got to have both, or you really need both, or one takes the place of the other. And that was not an easy transition.
No, so not at all.
It wasn't an easy transition, especially for the advertising people. I think it was harder for them because they were used to selling a physical, you know, column inch kind of thing. And now they had to be able to do that, combine it with digital that they themselves didn't understand completely. Who did? I mean,
right.
Really, honestly. So I think that that was the most cataclysmic change. And whether you adapted to it well or not, it's hard to say at this point.
Well, and then also saying, and it'll get to what you know, you've doing at, you know, in the Cox Media world, right, is you went from, we have this many subscribers, right?
Yeah.
And now we're going to go digital, and you still probably have better ratings, but in the computer world, you say you're going to get impressions, mm-hmm. or those kind of things. And I think that was always a tough part of the sales job as you're making that transition.
It wasn't, and the feel was much, much bigger. So you have an ad online. If you had an ad in print, there were only three or four places you could have an ad in print. If you had an ad online, there were a billion places real fast. So you begin talking about, in the case of newspapers, readers per month as opposed to readers per day. The frequency with the people went back to the same place changed.
How about, I always wondered about this, the Wednesday circular with the supermarket ads.
Yeah.
Right? Was that something that felt like it was kind of a lifeline for newspaper, local paper? That's just a guess I have.
It had been around longer than you might think.
Right.
It was around even when I was in Kansas City, and that was a long time ago.
Right.
It was a way to be able. Yes, it was an acknowledgement that not everybody was going to get your circular if it stood in the newspaper, but it was also an idea that, hey, we could expand this audience. We don't have to worry about just the people who subscribe to the paper.
Right.
Now we have a way, we being all of us, the advertisers and the newspaper, of reaching people who don't want to have that commitment to subscription but are happy to take a look at stuff on a Wednesday.
Gotcha. Mitch, how'd you end up at Cox Media? What was the previous gig and how'd you get there?
Yeah, I was in Michigan in radio and made a move with my wife to San Diego.
Okay.
And we lived in San Diego for 20 years, and when we first got there, really looking for another job, and found my job with Cox Media, and just recently retired from there after 25 years.
Look at you.
Yeah.
So my thing as a guy, I've bought advertising over the years. One of my favorite things about the Cox Media model was always about focusing down on demographics.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and it made it a much easier buy than other things out there. Is that something that...
That was kind of our unique qualities and how we used to position ourselves against the competition, in that we were able to really target lifestyles and demographics through programming and content.
So what was... So for, again, back to... So even though you just recently retired,
yes.
Right? So talk about the doing what you're doing in digital advertising with Cox on these channels... But then we have the streamers.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about...
Gosh,
we don't
have enough time.
I know.
And it's still evolving.
I could literally talk to each of you guys for like an hour on each of your things.
And quite frankly, you know, the consumer that still purchases cable for the video content is dwindling, and the company knows that and really isn't really doing anything about that, because the profitability isn't there any longer. And also, there's so many different ways to obtain that programming and content now over various platforms. So basically, that audience that we used to have is no longer there. So we had to explore these other streaming areas. So, you know, the company have done a good job in positioning us for the future, as far as, you know, as you probably know, there's so many ways you can stream that content now. And the job is to find where those eyeballs are, and it's a little bit more complex because they're scattered across all kinds of different platforms.
All over the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now that Disney and these other people are starting to open up their platforms for advertising.
And people used to complain about their cable bill.
Oh, it's true.
Now it's probably double for most people.
You have to do that. We call it the sharing economy, where we have six people on the same Disney account. So you didn't hear that, Disney. You didn't hear that, Bob Iger. Real quick, so Darryl, give me a big moment of pride for you when you look back at your career. What's kind of the pinnacle of what you did?
Long ago, when this is one of my previous jobs, we had an employee newsletter, of all things.
Look at you.
And I was had a good staff. They did a good job. And we entered it one time in an international newspaper competition. This is against the Tribune, the LA Times, all these people. in the newsletter category. We thought we'd do pretty good. We won bestest show. Of everything with a newsletter. And I thought, well, that tells you something about, you know.
Why was it so good?
It was just A, beautiful, B, it was big, it was an unusual size. I had some of the best illustrators in Kansas City, and Kansas City had a ton because of Hallmark cards, and many of them worked for me. So we did kind of quirky stories. We treated the newspaper like it was a neighborhood, and it was just fun to read, and I guess that's why. And when that was announced, my jaw dropped.
I love it.
And it, again, if you're creative and you stand out in an 8.5 by 11 world, things are going to go good for you.
Amen, Daryl. How about for you? Before we let you go, what's a high point for you in the media selling career?
If I had to pick one,
other than this Hall of Fame inductee,
of course, yes. After that, it would be probably 2020, and I've got to give all the credit to my team here in Tucson. Obviously, that's when COVID hit, and we went from a team that met every day and did our thing, and overnight, basically, we had to be remote, and I didn't even know how this thing was going to work. Advertisers were falling off. You know, the company was struggling, but our team, it's just amazing how they rallied, and actually, it turned out at the end of 2020 to be our biggest year ever, and we led all other divisions within Cox Media, and so it was turned out to be the most successful year of the company's history here in Tucson. So,
look at that.
Yeah.
I love it. That's a great story.
Yes.
All right, one last question, because it's both your debut on the show. Favorite locally owned restaurant you like to go to? We'll start with Daryl, and then we'll go to Mitch. Or should I start with Mitch?
Beyond Bread.
Beyond Bread.
I love that place.
What's your go-to sandwich? You got to have that go-to. What is it?
I usually like their, I can't think of the name of the egg sandwiches in the morning.
If I get
a sandwich at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love it. All right, Mitch, what about you?
Gosh, it depends on what I'm in the mood for.
Well, give me a couple if you want.
Kingfisher, if I want fish. And then my local, because I live on Tancredi, is the Cork. It used to be Jonathan's Cork.
Oh,
now
sure.
It's Cork. Sally's taking it over. So I'm giving you a plug there, Sally. So free drink for me next time I'm in, right?
We're shameless pluggers here on Wake Up Tucson, Mitch. All right, a pleasure meeting both you guys.
Congratulations on your
inductee into the Hall of Fame.
Thank you.
And let's talk to Slavin. Let's get a hall somewhere where your plaque is put up someplace, for God's sakes.
Pool hall.
I'd love that. I'd love to have my plaque in a pool hall.
Relatives come to visit, I can actually take them down the hall, and there it is.
We got to make something up here. We're going to figure this out. Gentlemen, congratulations. Great talking to you.
Thanks,
Chris. All right, that's Mitch and Daryl, our Hall of Fame inductees. We got two more to go before the show's over. Tomorrow we have Juan Almanza for Food Friday from El Taco Rustico. Mark's doing top 10 Alec Guinness movies. And there's two other people, but I'll remember that before it's all over. All right, 8:34 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. 10 years of celebrating these wonderful honorees of the AdFed Hall of Fame. I know I'm supposed to say Advertising Association, but I'm not saying it. So, and we have our Ad Professional of the Year, Bill Hussey. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And Becca Collins, the homecoming tour here. Back
yeah,
at the, of course, the daughter, wonderful daughter of our friends, Doug and Mary Martin.
Yeah.
Good morning. You're the Next Generation Award winner.
I am indeed.
And I heard your dad abdicated his office for you. Is this true?
Oh my gosh, he's such a liar. No. So I'll tell you what actually happened. I'll give you the real story. So Rhonda, you know, she retired.
What?
Yeah, she retired.
That's impossible.
I know. Isn't that amazing? It's kind of wild. You know, I've known Rhonda basically as long as I've been alive. And she
I'm
going
to miss all of her printed signs everywhere on the walls to tell us what to do. Yeah. Wash hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Turn off sink when finished.
Exactly. You know, dishes are clean. It's all of that, you know? But yeah, and so she had the corner office, and Rhonda was big into paper, and so there were these boxes of paper everywhere. And so when she left, we were trying to decide, well, who gets her office? Because Jane, who works in our office, was literally working in this really sad little countertop in the front, and it was a little pathetic.
I know that countertop.
Yeah, it was a little pathetic. And so we were like, you know, she needs a real office. And so my mom, Mary, just sort of took the lead and decided that my dad should get Rhonda's office because nobody else would want to ever deal with all of these files that were in there and all the paper. So my dad moves into the office. He's very upset about it. He made he made a real big deal of it. And he lasted about 10 minutes before he decided the boxes and the paper had to go. And that day, he hired somebody to come and shred everything. And so we had to be like, pump the brakes. We need to make sure that we have everything that we need. You can't just go through and shred everything.
My reality show about that Good News Communications is coming up soon.
You could 100% make a reality show just based around my dad. 100%. And it would be a national success.
So he's still in that office.
Yeah, he's in the corner. He technically has a corner office. He has the best office.
But you took over his office.
No, I didn't take over his office. No. Jane got his office.
Oh.
I stayed in my office, which, by the way, is probably the worst office in our little building. I don't have a lock. I don't, none of those things.
You're creative. That's why.
Exactly.
That's the creative folks.
Exactly.
Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Sorry, we just blew right past you in the Doug Martin story. So.
No, I love it. I love hearing it.
So you've been doing outdoor billboard sales for how many years?
33.
Ay, Chihuahua.
Yeah.
How'd you get into that?
Well, I needed a job.
Well played. What were you doing previously to?
I'd done some cable advertising, and I worked at Kagon.
Oh, wow.
And I was looking for an opportunity, and I saw, a great opportunity with a guy named Rick Rendon.
I know, Rick.
Oh, you're right.
Sure. And, AdVision in the old days.
Right. And Rick hired me back in 91. And it was a great run. I just retired.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, exactly.
So it feels like, you have the discussions of, we just had Daryl on, right? Talking about the changing landscape of paper, newspaper, then digital sales, then you're trying to sell both, right? Then I got Mitch here who's doing Cox Media, and then they're fighting against the changing world of what goes on with streamers going around Cox Media, and then they got to get into that game. Billboards. Now, I know we have, Jennifer's told me about all the caching and all that fun stuff, but in the end, billboards are billboards. Am I being a barbarian by saying such things?
No. The glacial change in billboards has been from hand painting to digital printing.
Gotcha.
And from posting up paper to stretching out basically PVC vinyl on boards. And that's about the only change. Yes, there's all kinds of new programs and so on that we use to track our clients and so on. But
right.
Essentially, it's the same. It's a on the street, in your face, totally obtrusive, and you can't avoid it.
That's right. Now, I don't want to make you feel old, but when you first started, there were hand painting boards?
They are. They were,
holy
yeah.
Holy moly.
We had seven artists painting in our warehouse was called the Paint Studio. Now it's just a warehouse.
Gotcha.
The only people who could afford the printing vinyls were people like Marlboro and Seagram's.
Gotcha.
And they would ship these vinyls that cost $5,000-$6,000 each to print. And they were really just a novelty at that time.
It was
weird.
What was the turnaround time? So someone says,
couple of weeks.
Oh, that's not bad.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It feels like doing a painting of a big giant board would take more than 2 weeks. But.
And the client would come in and inspect the final product. And if it was the the evening news team from KVOA and they came in, Patty Weiss would say, "That's not me," or whatever. And then they were very quick to go to the digital printing just because of the fact that they wanted that on-air staff to look as nice as they could.
So when was what year did the switch really happen that we stopped hand painting?
In the later 90s.
Okay.
Right. And that's John Ruby saw the value in that and invested in the printing of the vinyls. We went ahead and back in those days, we were allowed to do something called extensions where they were cutouts that went outside of the rectangle, the regular space. And the anchors' heads would actually pop up above the boards, and then the problem was to keep the pigeons off their heads because people would put out photos. and pigeons do what pigeons do, and that was always a
issue. I never
even
thought about that.
Well, they did.
Of course. My thing about any kind of advertising like that is, of course, you said obtrusive, right? It cuts through whatever they're listening to in their car, including talk radio, right?
It's a through the windshield, just like talk radio,
right?
You can't punch out.
Correct.
You shut your eyes.
Or now they're looking down at their phones while they're driving, right? I think also, right, is the fact that when we talk about that, the design of an ad, and we probably get Beck in on this discussion, I know it probably drives her crazy too, is even the billboard. Yeah, but how big is the typical billboard?
14 foot by 48. That's 14 high, 48 wide.
Okay. They have too much writing on the damn board.
Yeah. It's a huge mistake, because when you're driving by, especially off the freeway at 75 miles an hour,
and
how
do
much
we blame?
Can you read?
We blame the designers.
The creatives, yes, it's true.
Becca, you got to do something. Yeah.
So I have to say, when we do it, I design it, or, you know, we look at it from that standpoint of what can you read in just a couple of seconds, you know? And so it's hard with billboards specifically. You really have to make an impact as quickly as you possibly can. It can't just be white noise. And so you're absolutely right. I mean, it's one of those things where they're always until they ever get banned, right? Everybody's going to need, not everybody, but a lot of people can benefit from billboards. They're there. You can't, as you said, you can't
punch out.
You can't punch out. But yeah, a lot of them get lost when they just add in a million words and think that everybody's going to sit and read for 15 seconds.
I have a dear friend who, creative director at J. Walter Thompson.
Just a little closer to your microphone a little bit.
And he told me that in his early college years, his professor in his RTV, I think it was at University of Delaware, said that the first thing they're going to do before they do storyboards for television or anything like that, everybody had to design a billboard, because it made them concise, made them think, distill everything down to a single thought and deliver it quickly, 7 words or less. And that was a great lesson for him. And it just made you focus.
So what I was going to, and one more question on this, and we got to go to break, is, so I was going to ask you, what is, if you're sitting with a client, either both of you guys can answer this, but I'll ask you first, what's the secret of success to designing a billboard ad? What would you say?
To drive that prospective client or consumer to their website. And
right.
That's what we do anymore. We have to capture them and make them think, make them say, what are they trying to say there? Or what are they saying there? And get them involved and then drive them to their website. And that's it.
Now, how about, I always say they put their website on the board at times, but it's very small. Does that matter? Because they're going to get, or it's the idea that I just know, I see a picture of Doug Martin in his corner office in the billboard and I go, Good News Communications. I'm going to go look him up on Google.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that where we're at?
That's a huge mistake now, right? Don't you think, when people
yes.
waste space on phone number, website,
phone number is a waste of space.
Totally.
The focus should be on driving them to one site. A phone number, people don't remember that. They do remember if you're, Mary Martin and you're Martin Communications, martincommunications.com is what they're going to remember.
Right.
And
so would you say website, put it on a billboard?
I think
it's got to be huge, though.
Yeah, you have to know your why. So if you know your why, you can write a really compelling 7 words or less statement. And the main thing is just getting the brand into their brain. And then from there, they're going to Google it. And as long as you don't have a terrible website that's broken with really bad SEO, you're going to show up.
All right, hold that thought. We're hanging out with Bill Hussey. He's the ad professional of the year right after he got out. And our friend Becca Collins, part of Good News Communications, the Next Generation Award winner at the Hall of Fame Achievement, AdFed Hall of Achievement ceremonies tonight at Hacienda del Sol. Wake up. All right. Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson. Always having fun with our bump music, and we're doing one artist versus the other kind of artist battles for the bump. Today we did Elton John versus Billy Joel. So after we did Sting Phil Collins yesterday, we're having a lot of fun with these. And we got one more segment talking with Becca and Bill. Bill Hussey is the ad professional of the year, and he just recently retired from Clear Channel Outdoor. And Becca is the Wunderkind over at Good News Communications, owned by the Martin family. And she is the Next Generation Award. So when the Padres said, was this, did you ask them to get into the biz? You grew up in the biz in a way, right? Around the biz.
So I wanted nothing to do with this my whole life growing up. I'll just tell you just very, very bluntly. So it's weird even coming back here because I pretty much grew up in this building.
You know what's really scary? We're in your mom's office.
I know. It's actually, so you know, back in the day, they didn't have remote work. So
the drive is Elsa's office.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It all looks kind of different right now. You know, you don't have the big popcorn machine. You guys have downgraded
your
to the little one.
Your dad loved that one.
Oh, yeah. He was obsessed with it. He was so sad we didn't take it with us. true. We've talked about bringing it back, but, you know, it needs
part
to just
be part of Elsa's job duty was to pop popcorn.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. I'm sure she loved that. No, but I basically grew up here because anytime we got sick or if we were out of school, right, we lived in the office.
Right.
And so anybody who worked here from, you know, the 80s until the early 2000s probably absolutely hated us because there was four of us just running around like crazy.
Well, and you know, and your parents did kidnap those workers when they were 12 and they worked here for 30 years. Elsa, Rhonda,
exactly.
Jerry.
It's so true. It's so true. They had a lot of longevity in their staff, which is awesome.
Yep.
But yeah, I never wanted to do radio. Had zero interest in doing anything with marketing, sales, all of that stuff. And then just kind of as luck would have it, my husband was working for a nonprofit and he needed a grant writer. And I started grant writing for him. And so I fell into nonprofit that way. And when they were looking at selling their business, I said, hey, you know, there's a lot of nonprofits that could use a marketing agency. At the time, I really only wanted to do consulting because that was kind of what I was doing anyways.
Right.
And so it was sort of, I want to say, if you ask my dad, he would say he talked me into working for them. If you ask me, I would say I talked them into going into this together.
Gotcha.
So different perspectives. You
That's
know.
Okay. So what was so grant writer was your kind of your thing coming in,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, well, that and I'd learned how to do fundraising there. So I was there at, it was Gap Ministries. I was at Gap Ministries for several years doing grant writing and fundraising.
So what was something that came a little easier to you in the world of, as you started expanding your marketing duties at Good News, what was some of the easier things?
So strategy and content, and that's really a lot of what we still do, to this day is just strategy and content. I think I have an aptitude for that. A lot of it is just, inherited, you know, because I grew up around advertising. So when yeah. I was growing up, my dad, in fact, when we would go on road trips, all you would hear is the white noise of the dial because they would go from radio station to radio station figuring out, you know, what kind of formats were available, and like they would listen to the different ads and they'd get ideas. And so I kind of grew up around all that creativity.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we would watch all the ads. My dad would never channel surf. So if you were watching a show, you were watching all of the ads. growing up. And I always honestly loved watching ads. And so all of that stuff was sort of just, I guess, inbred in me and then also nurtured throughout my life. So that kind of has always come a little bit easier to me.
Right.
Digital was a high learning curve. Learning
okay.
the world of digital.
Well, and again, you guys are knee deep when you first started this thing, when the digital thing was really getting to go, really move fast and furious.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, I can't tell you how many days I would come home when we first started and I would just be crying on the ground to my husband, like, this is so different. I felt so comfortable in just nonprofit fundraising and grant writing, and that felt so, I was good at it. You know, why did I make this decision? And so he said something that he had all these like one-liners that he would tell me. And one of the things is he goes, you just got to fake it till you make it. 99% of people are faking it till they make it. So that was my mantra for the first 6 months, is just fake it till you make
it. I've been doing that for 15 years here.
You know what?
So
people don't notice, really. If you speak with confidence and, you know, you project and you really sound like you believe in what you're saying.
God bless you. Here's a question for you. So even with all the fast and furious of digital, there are still some old school things that are effective.
Yeah, absolutely.
And especially if you're going for the 55 plus demo,
yep.
Right?
Yep, 100%. So in fact, we were just talking about that out there, is that, you know, especially like nonprofits, for sure, their donor base is not 20 to 35. It's just not. They'll have some donors in that. Obviously, they have to do a lot of work cultivating that. But they kill it on traditional media because their donors are older. They trust radio. They trust TV. They trust print way more than they trust digital.
Right.
And that's where they are, too. I mean, your listeners, you know.
Yep.
They're so loyal to
they
you.
They are amazingly loyal. And they're generous as hell.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? We did a dinner at a Westward Look in the middle of August and raised almost $26,000 in an evening for Honor Flight. Just out of nowhere.
I don't doubt it at all.
Right? They're just amazing. So the question I have in the old school world, right, is because we know billboards works for everybody. Billboards is, you know, just like the Christmas song from age 2 to 92, whatever. that's billboards. But the question I had for you was, if you were going to go after the demographic of 55 plus in social digital, what would you do?
Oh, gosh, that's really hard. Well, you have to know who you're trying to reach, right? And
right.
So if you're looking at digital, on the whole, Facebook is going to outperform Instagram in that age demo because Instagram is just younger.
Correct.
It's going to outperform TikTok. It's going to outperform a lot.
So Facebook is really the refuge of the senior.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and then Google Ads. Google Ads do really, really well across the board. YouTube is the second most used search engine. So I know my dad, for instance, is terrible at fixing things, but he Googles it on YouTube.
Of course.
YouTube. Watches a 10-minute video, and then he's a professional and knows how to, you know, fix a toilet, right?
Right.
And so,
Don't give
Google
up
Ads
our secrets.
Yeah. That is a well-known secret. So Google does well. Facebook does well.
I think the other thing, too, when people say Facebook, I always ask seniors who are on Facebook, I go, how often are you on it? And they go, well, about once a month. I go, why do you get on once a month? Well, my daughter said there's pictures of the grandkids.
Yep, absolutely. It's true.
Right? That's it's the true. Other thing about, yes, Facebook is the refuge socially, mm-hmm. social media-wise, of the 55-pluser, but they're not on that often.
I think they lie about that. I think they're on a lot more than they say they are. I know you're not, so I know you're not lying. But
that's why Bill's so serene and happy in his life.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, my dad would say that he's barely ever on social media, and we all know that's a lie.
Your dad is a social, he's worse than a 17-year-old girl.
I 100% agree
media.
With you.
He's on LinkedIn. He's got to put it on LinkedIn. He's got to put everything. And then he gets all these freaks that keep going after him. This guy, Tom Zellner, just hates your dad's guts.
He really does.
And keeps doing all these things. And Doug's like, let me hop on there again. And
so I can't follow him anymore. My sister does, and she'll tell me what's going on. I have a friend group who they read his posts and his comments specifically like they're tabloids. And so I know more about what goes on his social media from my friends and my sister than I do from actually interacting with it. They're too crazy.
Oh, you get the little ding for that one. That's perfect. Okay. Bill, before we get going, proudest moment of doing 33 years of outdoor advertising. What's your proudest moment?
I've got a lot of them.
One of your proudest moments.
Okay. I've got a chance to meet Herb Kelleher and Pete Coors by putting up billboards for them, congratulating them for different achievements. Herb got an award from the U of A for his startup, Southwest Airlines.
And that little
Pete
thing.
Coors flew into town and put up a welcome board for him, and he loved it and asked me to come to the first game of the Colorado Rockies, which was played at High Corbett Field.
Look at you.
He threw out the first pitch. We had a good bunch of times all around those. Those were really exciting. A lot of it wasn't as exciting, as sometimes, working with Geico is fun, but just not as exhilarating as meeting those personalities.
I bet you. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
See you tonight at the event. For you and your short career in 30 seconds or less, what's something that pops out that you're very proud of that you've done at Good News?
So I love the nonprofit work that I do. That is always meaningful. I feel like that is the culmination of me using my giftings and my abilities to really impact the community. I never feel more at home than I do when I'm doing nonprofit work.
I think that's perfect for the daughter of Doug and Mary. That, yeah. That's your sweet spot.
Exactly. You know what? It's we're raised with it, right?
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Becca Collins, Bill Hussey. See you guys tonight.
Thank you.
Wakeys, we'll see you tomorrow. Juan from El Taco Rustico. Mark's doing top 10 Alec Guinness movies tomorrow. Wake up.